Though Barack Obama's ascent to the presidency is a monumental step in America, our takeaway contributor, Patrick Henry Bass, says it doesn't mean there isn't more work to be done to address the long legacy of racism and discrimination. Patrick is a senior editor of Essence magazine and author of Like a Mighty Stream, The March on Washington, August 28, 1963. Welcome and good morning.
Well, I'm glad to be here. I feel like the wet blanket sort of, this sort of wonderful day, this historic day. But there are certain realities that we have to face about this country. Next month is going to be the centennial anniversary of the NAACP. A lot of people are questioning whether or not the NAACP is still relevant. And I insist that it's just as relevant now as it's ever been, and especially given the statistics that we're seeing, about the African-American community.
And that's the discussion that's going on in just so many corners of both the African-American community and the community at large, which is when people ask, and you see a lot of these headlines, is racism dead? It's almost laughable to me because by every measurable way, clearly it's not.
It's not. Well, racism is about an attitude. Toni Morrison calls racism cowardice. So, it's always been about a feeling or attitude or opinion or belief. And so it's not as if you can make people stop believing that African-Americans are in some way less than or inferior. We have visible evidence today that African-American and his African-American family will be the first family of the United States of America through votes. So in many ways, Barack Obama was able to transform certain attitudes. But it doesn't mean that, someone sitting beside an African-American at a bus station doesn't want to be there, or that I'll get a cab when I leave the studio
right.
very
or
easily.
Or won't get a job.
Or
won't
a white
have
lady
access
will grab
to health
purse, in the elevator. Absolutely.
Maybe eradication isn't the issue today. Maybe the issue is that the agenda is shifted somehow, and that on some level there is a changing of the guard going on even within the African-American community in terms of who is a leader. You mentioned the NAACP's centennial. I think even people within the NAACP would indicate, I think candidly, that there's change afoot.
Right. And many of them didn't see that change coming. A lot of them held on a bit too long. I mean, there has been a change in the guard within the African-American community. Gwen Ifill has written a brilliant book called The Breakthrough that looks at the ascent not only of Barack Obama, but also Deval Patrick in Massachusetts and also Adrian Fenty
in Washington,
D.C. And with the March on Washington, you had, A. Philip Randolph, brilliant man, giving a passing of the baton to Dr. King. Roy Wilkins of the NAACP did not want to pass that baton. It was sort of snatched away from him because events were bigger than the NAACP was at that time, although the NAACP funded a great number of efforts like the desegregation of Little Rock High School.
Maybe it's an enlargement then. If the NAACP was not big enough to hold Dr. King's movement at that passing of the baton in the March on Washington, maybe the African-American community alone isn't big enough to hold the entire agenda of diversity that Barack Obama promises. Maybe doesn't deliver, but promises. There is a huge, huge outpouring of sentiment across all racial lines here.
Right. Well, what I witness, as Barack Obama started to nominate people for his cabinet, there were a number of African Americans who were saying, "Okay, well, where are the African Americans in the cabinet?" Despite mm-hmm. Holder and despite Susan Rice, people were like, "Well, there are so many qualified African Americans out there whose names weren't even submitted." So I think the notion of managing expectations that people somehow felt that this was going to be a largely African American cabinet was unrealistic.
And isn't that part of the issue though? Is managing the expectations, and that's both for African Americans and for whites. For so long, the conversation about race is always about African Americans and somehow their duty to bridge the gap, where it really has to be a national discussion that is addressed by all races.
Absolutely.
And isn't that part of his promise?
I'm not sure if he made that promise, but it was part of his conversation. Mm. It's part of his talking points in certain ways. But when it comes to race, it's almost always as if it's been an African American problem.
Right. Somehow we created racism in America.
It's been a national challenge, And so right now we are seeing strides taken to address that challenge. And that conversation has to take place in a real meaningful way that's not symbolic. And that's been the challenge of the euphoria and the celebration and we are one.
And
concert.
The challenge of both the African-American right. leadership as well as the leadership of the entire country.
Well, Andrea Bernstein was saying right at the top of the hour that, she talked with some individuals who on their way here had their first sustained conversation about race in their lives. And that was on their trip from Alabama.
And I would love to have been a fly on the wall to know what the parameters of that conversation were.
But now, that's exciting. Those kinds of conversations are exciting.
No, of course it is. But what's definitely going to start to move towards the front burner, again, are issues like economics. You know, issues like health care, you know, so.
And the cabinet. I can ask you this. Is it a federal law that to be a woman African-American in the cabinet, your last name has to be Rice?
I think so.
I was surprised that there weren't as many of those faces.
Yeah, well, definitely at Essence Magazine, you know, there are a number, you know, Essence Magazine is a magazine that primarily services black women. And so, you know, people, you know, we see these qualified women in the magazine every month, one of whom is Adoria Doji, one of our top 25.
Of course, that's right. That is right. That is right. And you know? She didn't get the call. Man, look at what's going on here. Well, you're going off to your big screen. That's right. I know.
John, I'm going to be watching it in the cafeteria, so I'll be in the kitchen.
All right.
County Cullen.
Have a great inauguration day.
I appreciate that.
Patrick Henry Bass, senior editor at Essence Magazine. It's expected to be chilly out there in D.C., but it's not stopping millions.
It's not a fashion statement out here on the mall today, I assure you. You know, everybody wanted to make sure that they weren't going to miss this because of logistics.
She's way inside the Beltway. Your takeaway comes from Andrea Bernstein. You can hear her reports on our website at thetakeaway.org. And Adora and I are going to be live blogging the inauguration starting at 11:30 this morning.
We really
want to know what you're doing. You can participate in that conversation. Where are you going to watch? Who are you going to be with? All of that will be later on this morning. And tell us your inauguration plans at 877-8-MY-TAKE. You're the star of this show. Or weigh in at mytake@thetakeaway.org.
I'm Adora Udoji on this inauguration day.
And I'm John Huckenberry. This is The Takeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.